And we're live. It is another weekly update with yet more pieces of equipment laying around me. I've got so many bits and pieces of stuff laying around in this office just trying to make everything work. Now, I am going to talk about that today. Before that, I'm going to start where I normally start now on these live weekly updates, which, geez, what's this, like 6 weeks or something I've been doing? This has become a thing, so this is, I think, the new thing that will stick. Sponsor this week is a very good fit for Have I Been Pwned. It's safepass.me. SafePass was there last week as well. They use a whole bunch of Pwned passwords data for organizations to be able to take that, roll it into their Active Directory, make sure people aren't using all of the terrible passwords that we know most of them are actually using. So go and check out safepass.me. They do a really good job of what they do by enabling, enabling them to do that with some of the Have I Been Pwned stuff. Anyway, big thanks to those folks for being the sponsor the last couple of weeks. You'll see them around a bit more in the future as well. So, right, that was sponsor bit. Now, other things. I was talking about bits and pieces like around me everywhere. This just arrived in the mailbox. So this is the shock mount that is meant to go on this. So for those of you later listening to this on the podcast, I'm holding up my Rode Broadcaster mic, which I'm very, very happy with. And when I held it up, some of you might have seen that it does now have a pop filter on it. I really haven't had much time to test that other than the levels because it just arrived in the mailbox. The reason the shock mount is in pieces is because the unit that it actually mounts into, for those not familiar with the shock mount, so basically all of these bits on the side here, they're like elastic bands. And you've got a unit that sits in the middle of it, and if there's any sort of bumping of the desk or earthquake, I don't know, like movement of other things, this little bit here, which is effectively the caddy for the microphone, has some, it's like little shock absorbers, right, between the thing that it's mounted to and the microphone itself, so it doesn't transfer noise and stuff like that. Fantastic theory. I had one on my last electro voice for many, many, many years. All good. Problem is I've just gone to put it together and the broadcaster mic I have has a little on-air light, which is a little like nodule off the top of the mic, which gives it just enough width that it won't fit inside the damn hole here. So I think I'm going to have to maybe get on the road and ask what the deal is. Maybe this shock mount's just not meant to fit. Maybe this is something I can fix with a pair of pliers because this only needs to be a little bit wider and things would work. So that's one piece of tech laying around all over the place at the moment. The other piece, which is normally I have a really clean office. Like the office is the thing that I'm probably best at keeping neat, is these bits and pieces. Now, these bits and pieces go with the monitor, which I finally bought. So I think last week I was not too sure on what I was going to do with monitors and things. And just by way of background, as well as my electro voice mic breaking a couple of weeks ago, my entire PC broke. Now, the more accurate definition of what actually broke, a pump inside one of the water cooling units, there's a water cooling unit for the GPU and for the CPU, broke. Inevitably, it was the one for the CPU because that temperature started heading up north of 100 degrees Celsius, thermal shutdowns. And then I realized the PC, the other day I said I thought it was about half a dozen years old. It's actually 8 years old because I have some images saved on my phone that describe the BIOS setup because every now and then I'd lost the BIOS settings and I checked them in 2012. So I got 8 years out of the desktop PC, which I think is actually pretty good. But anyway, so I've ordered a brand new PC. I'm going to talk about that in a moment because I had to make some decisions there. The monitors that I had here actually date back more than a decade. So I had four 24-inch Samsung 16x9 monitors. In fact, they were the ones that were like 1920 by 1200, so just a little bit higher than usual. So because they're well and truly on the way out, I decided to get an ultra-wide. So I've got a Samsung. Let me find the exact model because a lot of people actually gave me some good input on this. So if I go and look up my notes here. In fact, I ran a poll. Let me talk about the poll. What was the ultimate result there? I ran a poll about people with ultra-wide monitors and whether or not they liked them. Now, it was interesting to sort of see very divisive comments, but then the poll itself was overwhelmingly in favor of an ultra-wide monitor. Here you go. So I said, alrighty, I'm getting heaps of conflicting responses, so it's poll time. Now, this was 6 days ago. So since I did the last weekly update. Poll time. If you've used an ultra-wide curve monitor in the past, is it a good thing? Purpose is mixed use and includes coding, reading, video editing, and posting photos of Australian beaches. Should I go big curved? And 60.6% of people said yes, which left 39.4% of people saying no. So that was a pretty overwhelmingly positive response. So I went and got the big curved monitor. So what I got here, this is a Samsung CRG90. Now it is about, I can't even do the hands right. It's about that wide. Like imagine two 27-inch monitors side by side. The resolution on this sucker is 5,120 by 1440. It's got a refresh rate of 120 hertz. Sorry. And what I have since learned is that you can only get the 120 hertz via DisplayPort. So at the moment, this is actually tethered to my normal laptop off HDMI. And I do find that with that lower refresh rate, it's running at about 60 hertz at the moment, there are a few little glitchy things which I'm really, really hoping when the proper PC arrives and I DisplayPort into this sucker, I will actually have the full 120 hertz and it should look a lot sharper. I am running it in full resolution at the moment and I can't show you what's on the screen here because there's a lot of different things. But one of the things I'm running, which a lot of people suggest, is they said go and get Power Toys and use Fancy Zones. Now, Fancy Zones are super cool because you can take any screen and divide them up into zones of whatever choosing you like. And then when you drag a window, you hold the shift key and then you drop the window in a zone and it snaps to it. So at the moment, I've just gone with effectively three vertical screens. So I've got like one browser, the YouTube stuff and me there and another one here. And Fancy Zones is super, super cool. I'm really, really impressed at how nice this is. Fata Power Toys, it's free. Go and give that a go. Obviously, it's a Windows thing. So the big screen is here. I got two more that I'm about to pull the trigger on today, which are Samsung CJG54s. Now, they are 27-inch screens. They're 2560 by 1440. They also run, I think they actually run about 140 hertz. They run a little bit higher. But they're for all intents and purposes, they look identical to this one, but just half the width. And the one will go there, one will go there, and it will be freaking mission control, like all over the place. So I'm really looking forward to those. Now, that'll be a total of three monitors, three display ports, the GPU or the graphics card, which is in the PC that I bought, has three display port settings. I'll talk about the PC in a moment. The next thing is that I've got to order some Visa mount monitor arms. So it is a really, really big stand that this one in front of me is on at the moment. The thing weighs, I think it's about 15 kilograms. But because it's a big stand, this screen is probably about this far, call it 15 centimeters, 6 inches too close to me. So I want to get that back. And then there'll be Visa mounts on the side. And then the whole thing will just be like, ideally, one continuous curve that will look freaking epic. And it's worthwhile doing because I got a decade out of the last ones. And this has literally been the like epicenter of my life, my commercial life, and some would argue many aspects of my other life. So, worthwhile spending money on those things. That's going to look super, super cool. When all that's done, I'll get some nice photos and things because panning the camera around wouldn't do it justice. The PC. You know how on the internet everyone's got an opinion, right? So the main thing for me is this is literally what I kind of live and die by. So what I mean by that is my entire work life, my blogging, the running of Have I Been Pwned, all the webinars or training or anything I do, I'm entirely dependent on reliable machinery. The number one thing for me is I want something reliable. I'm enormously time poor at the moment. It's the school holidays. I really want to be spending time with the kids and doing that sort of thing. So basically, I want something that just works and I don't have to think about. Now, as I've written many times before, I do have a relationship with Lenovo. I've got a Lenovo laptop driving this one and another one driving that one, both machines that they had sent me in previous years. They'd sent me those things on part of the program because I'd spent money with Lenovo, the Chinese PC maker, you know the one, many times in the past. So I wanted to go and get another Lenovo machine because in all honesty, the thing about them, particularly anything that sort of fits into that business end of the SKU, they've just been rock solid. The amount of abuse that I've dished out on these laptops is insane. So I wanted to do that. And then part of the program, I do get money off as well. So they make pricing much more compelling. Now, also by buying a pre-built machine, it comes delivered to my door. If I have problems, I just ship it back while I use another machine. I don't have to think about it. And yes, I've built many, many, many PCs on my own in the past, which has been really good fun when I haven't had the time pressure and it hasn't been my entire life that's built into it. And I haven't had kids to worry about or things like that. Those last monitors came before I had children. That's how old they are. So this time I just want something shipped in the box. Now, that meant going down an Intel path and going down a Xeon path, which we'll talk about in a moment. A lot of people went, go and get a Threadripper, because a Threadripper, which is an AMD implementation, has like 128 cores and it's amazing. And I'm sure it is, but I don't want to go out and build another PC or get something that I'm not 100% confident with. So I ordered a dual Xeon machine with 128 gigabytes of RAM. It has, what was it, an RTX 4000, I think, GPU. I've got to go and check all the specs again because I'm like halfway between ordering other things. That bit's already ordered. I'm looking at the comments here. So George just retracted his comment. I saw George go, get a Threadripper. It's a very, very fair comment. And if I had the time and the luxury to be able to choose, I would seriously look into that. But I really don't at the moment. Plus, the dual Xeon is going to be an absolute monster of a machine. Anyway. So that's ordered. That will drive the you are predictable, George. That will drive all of the monitors that are here. I'll get many, many years out of that. I'll take a bunch of the discs because I've got a heap of nice SSD discs and some really high capacity spinning rust that are in the other PC there. Not doing anything at the moment. Ali's just made a comment here. I hope the dual Xeon machine would be silent. I hope it's going to be silent too, mate. I really do, because it's got to sit down there pretty close. But look, worst case, if I do sort of switch out some fans or do some other soundproofing, then so be it. But look, I think it'll be a great machine. Unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be probably at least 2 weeks before it arrives. So in the interim, I'm using this one. And yeah, those Noctua fans. So in fact, the machine I've got down there, which doesn't work at the moment, had Noctua fans in them as well, and they're fantastic. So they're coming now. The other thing is the time of year. So today is the 26th of June. At the end of June, i.e. Monday, I think Monday is the last day of June, isn't it? Does that make sense? No, Tuesday. Tuesday is the last day of June. Jeez, what date are we even in? It'll all become a blur. Tuesday is the last day of June. That is the last day of the Australian financial year. And inevitably, as you sort of get to the May timeframe each year, a bunch of companies start advertising end of financial year deals. A lot of companies want to spend money before the end of the financial year just simply because you get the tax advantage if you spend it on 30 June a year earlier than what you get the tax advantage if you spend on 1 July. So it's not a reason to go out and blow money that you wouldn't be spending anyway. But if you've got money to spend over the next few months, getting a tax advantage a little bit earlier on is always a nice thing. So I was kind of looking around the house going, what is it that I'm genuinely short of at the moment? And incidentally, if anyone has any suggestions about tech things that you absolutely love that do actually make your life better, make you more productive, and ultimately because of tax deduction, enable you to earn more money or do your job better or work less or stress-free or whatever it may be, drop me a comment, let me know. What I did realize I really needed, which I don't have, is UPSs. Now, I have had UPSs, so uninterruptible power supplies, devices which provide a combination of surge protection. They'll protect you if you have a power cycle. They'll protect you if you have brownouts. I have had them in the past. The last one I had was an APC unit, which died a few years ago. It died way too young. Like, this wasn't just battery failure. I can't even remember the circumstances. I just know I was exceptionally busy, and I just went, stuff it, you know. Get rid of it. I actually got that because I'd had power failures before when I was doing things like recording Pluralsight courses. And if you lose that, you get very, very, very upset. So what I decided I needed is a rack mount UPS, which is going to go down into my rack with all my Ubiquiti bits and pieces. Someone from Ubiquiti reached out and reminded me that Ubiquiti does actually have a UPS solution specifically to power the Dream Machine and the Gen 2 switch. So I believe I actually have one of those on the way, which is nice. That, as I've said very transparently before, that is a relationship I have with Ubiquiti. They do send me things. Doesn't entirely fix my problem, though, because I've got things like a Synology NAS in the rack. I've got things like I'd like to maintain internet connectivity. And I realized this again the other day when I actually had smoke alarms tested. So you've got to have smoke alarms tested on a regular basis here in Australia. The guy said, I need to power cycle. Is that okay? And I'm like, oh, shit. The amount of stuff I now need to shut down. And this is when you plan a power cycle. You know, every now and then a circuit trips or we have a power outage. And you don't plan it and stuff shuts down very ungracefully. So ask the question on Twitter, a heap of support for Eaton. So I think I'm going to go with Eaton and I'm just deciding what spec I need Eaton-wise. So I'm going to get a rack-mounted Eaton unit and then I'll get another Eaton unit that I can sit here, which is a long way away from my rack, which will provide UPS to the PC itself. So I think I'm going to put the order for those guys in today. And again, that'll be a unit that, you know, I might have to cycle a battery in a few years' time, but for the most part, they should last a long time. All right, just looking at the comments here, Ali, the tech stuff justifies the monitors and the Xeon and the microphone. You know what, to be honest, mate, what justifies that is the return on the investment. Now, I wrote a blog post New Year's Eve before last called Financial Tips for Technology Professionals. And there's a whole bunch of my thinking in there about how to think of money. This should be like a totally separate weekly update or something sometime. But for me, I know the value of my time and I know when I do work for organizations, what that's worth. And I also know what I'm willing to pay for my own time just to be able to have it back to spend it with the kids or go out on the jet ski or something like that. And particularly for equipment that you get many, many, many years worth of usage out of, the microphone is a good example of that. I'm willing to spend money if I feel it's going to make the quality of what I do better, if it's going to reduce the effort on my work later on, or if it's going to allow me to produce more. So the microphone, I think in Aus dollars, it was like $450. Now, I could have got one for about $250 and it probably would have been very, very similar. But it's $200 and it's pre-tax, which means the actual net impact on me is something much less than that. And it's also going to last, let's say it lasts for 5 years. So now you're like, okay, well then the net impact is probably something like $30 a year. Now it's actually going to have a better quality recording, and most specifically, and the reason I spend good money on microphones is to exclude more of the background noise, get more of the richness out of your voice, produce a better. It's easy to justify this stuff when there's a return on it. So for things like that, the tax helps just the financial calculations. But you know what? If you want to reduce your tax, there's a really, really easy way to reduce tax. Make loads and loads of bad investments. Right? So it's not about reducing tax. That is a side effect. It's a benefit. It's not the goal. VR headsets, I really don't need one of those. I wonder about your audio interface. So I have a Yamaha Audiogram 3, which still seems to be working very well. I got that with the Electro Voice originally, so no problems just there. Stefan. Hello, Stefan. I was going to suggest you get more Ubiquiti gear and a UPS. Yeah, I got that covered. So now, George, that's a work expense. You don't pay tax on it anyway. Effectively not. Of course, it depends what it is, because if it's computer hardware beyond a certain point, at least in Australia, we've got to depreciate that over a period of years. So you still save the tax on it. All you're really doing is sort of deferring money in that regard, deferring the tax benefit. But a lot of other stuff, like looking around the office, it was things like, look, there's some cables and things I needed. It's minor stuff, but it just brings the tax benefit of that forward a little bit. So what else are we doing here in the house? Doing a lot of IoT still. So today I had, it was meant to be 15, but I seem to have had 13 of the little Xiaomi Chinese thermometers arrive. Now, if I go and grab one, for those that haven't seen them before, these are the little Zigbee ones. So if you're listening to this rather than watching it, it fits very, very neatly in the palm of my hand. It's actually very small. Now, they run over Zigbee, so they're real low power utilization. I've had two of these for a little while just to sort of figure out whether I like them or not. Turns out I do. They're very good. And especially at this time of year, it's a little bit funny here because our houses are made to cool down. Where we are. And at the moment, I mean, all right, it's 17 Celsius at the moment, but it's been down to like 9 outside. They don't warm up real well. People here don't tend to run heaters at night, not unless you're out in the mountains and it's cold. you get up and it's super cold and the kids are like, it's cold. And it's all right, let us measure this stuff. And of course, once we measure it and it's tied into Home Assistant, then we can go down the road, all right, do we have automated thermostats as well? So anyway, I thought, okay, let's just begin by measuring stuff. So I got a heap of those thermometers I now need to go and set up. What I'm pretty impressed about is the Zigbee Sniffer, which is a Conbee something something, is sitting inside the server cabinet all the way down under the house, multiple floors with like reinforced concrete, and I'm still getting a signal here. I did not expect that at all. I noticed it did drop out for a little bit of time, maybe like a door was shut or something. So I do want to get a repeater. Now, any mains-powered Zigbee device apparently can be a repeater. So I've had people say, go and get like one of the IKEA light bulbs, and that's about the cheapest Zigbee repeater you can get for $30 Aussie or something. So I might try and find a couple of places to put some of those. But yeah, so that's what I'm working on at the moment, IoTing my things when I get the spare time. Okay, so I did actually have things on a list here, believe it or not, and that was part of it. I hit 100,000 tweets the other day, which was, and I shouldn't say unexpected, we can all do the math. I knew it was coming, but yeah, 100,000 tweets is, where does the time go? The first tweet ever made, someone sent it back to me, effectively said, what is this Twitter stuff all about? And that would have been 12 years ago or something. And then I was out jet skiing with a mate yesterday, someone who's not in the tech circles. And he's like, what do you do on this Twitter? It's, it's like 80% InfoSec stuff and 10% beaches and 10% beer or something like that. It's a bit of a mix, but it is funny how quick that time goes. Have I Been Pwned is about to hit 100,000 followers on Twitter as well, which is pretty cool. So that time will come soon. A couple of other things been happening. Next week I have a talk for Redgate. In fact, it's going to be a Q&A for Redgate. So Redgate I've got a very long association with. So they build products like SQL Compare was my first exposure to Redgate to synchronize databases across environments. Still use that product today. SQL Data Compare, SQL Prompt, which I use in SQL Server Management Studio to autocomplete things. So long association with them. They asked if I'd do a Q&A. So do I have to prepare anything? No. Okay, sweet. We'll do that. So I'm going to do that Q&A in the coming week when I do the blog post for this. I'll put a reference to that. Also, Akamai. So I have a couple of talks coming up for Akamai in this coming week, as well as Q&A with them. So I'll put some links into the Akamai things too. Now, last year, I actually did the same thing for them in person in Sydney. This year, it's like, I want to do it again, but I'm not doing it in person. So that'll be then. Other things, data breaches. So a couple of interesting things this week. So number one is the Quid data breach. Now, this hit the news a little while ago, a couple of months ago. It's just one of these ones that sort of circulated for a while and then inevitably turned up. It's almost 4 million people. Quid is a trading marketplace. It seems to be like for cards and things like that. Bcrypt hashes, so good on them for that. Not going to be a huge amount of those cracked compared to all the MD5s and SHA-1s that we still see around the place. 63% of the accounts already in Have I Been Pwned. Another one, which I can't talk about yet, but has a super, super interesting story behind it where someone, I've got to be careful what I say, but someone in the organization related to this reached out after having had some reports of some odd things. And it began by sounding like, look, it's one person using bad passwords. And then as we kind of went down the rabbit hole, excuse me, and delved into another data breach that this person had also appeared in Have I Been Pwned, we actually managed to discover that this organization themselves had almost certainly been breached. And I say almost certainly because until they actually come up with a disclosure, that's not something that I want to put words in their mouth on. But that's going to be really interesting. I think it's actually a great story for that. So I might write a blog post out of it. Otherwise, I'll at least give everyone the insights. So I would expect to be able to talk about that by next week, given that there is a clock ticking on these things. So that will be interesting. So I mentioned here, Ali, you mentioned actually your PM announced that Australia is being cybered by state actor. Any update on that? Now, Yeah, this is really big news about a week ago. It's always interesting when there's an InfoSec story that is consumer facing, because you know it's going to be big then. You know, there's so many InfoSec things that don't make the front news, pages of the news, but this is front page news. So look, it's kind of the usual thing. Government comes out, sophisticated nation state actor, we won't say who it is, China. And that seems to be where it is at the moment. So there have been industry experts on sort of the geopolitical side of things, not just the InfoSec side of things, make suggestions about who it was that surprised absolutely nobody. But then there's a lot of politics going on, particularly at the moment, around the coronavirus thing, Australia calling for an inquiry into how the whole thing began in the first place, China not being so happy about that, not wanting to send students to Australia. Us, I heard someone say recently something like 30% of our tourism comes from China, like massive amount of it. And, yeah, compared to China, we're a small country. We've got 25 million people here and they've got, a billion plus something. So keeping good relationships is very important. So it might be one of these things where it's like the government just doesn't say it, but it's implied. And it's, who knows? All right, so moving on. Chrome. Now, I meant to talk about this last week, and I totally forgot about it. So I'm just going to pull up the original tweet here. Chrome and their Omnibar. Now, of course, the Omnibar is the thing which you can type a URL into, and you can also type a search term into. And the headline, I could just tell the headline is not going to be good. So let's explain this objectively first, and then we can go through and talk about the headline. So the Omnibar. Let's say I'm looking at the moment, looking at a story from Android Police. So this is androidpolice.com. I see a padlock, which of course implies one thing that many people don't understand. I see androidpolice.com, and then I see a great big freaking URL, which does actually have some useful information in it because it's got year, month, day. It's got the details of the website or of the story rather, and then that's it. Now, if I go and have a look at, let me just pick another tab here. What's something with a ridiculous big query string in it? There must be one of those. I'm buying some stuff at the moment. Do you know what? You want to see a ridiculous big string with a bunch of crap in it? Just do a Google search. Google.com/search Q equals what size UPS to buy. You can see what I was doing here. And OQ equals what size UPS to buy. And AQS equals Chrome.69. iPhone, and then just a whole bunch of crap. Point is, you get a lot of rubbish in the Omnibar. Now, Google has long been of the view that when you put too much crap in the Omnibar, it makes it harder for people to focus on the things that actually enable them to make informed decisions about the legitimacy of the site. Now, all the way back in, I think it was about May 2018, I did a talk in Hawaii at Lake Omokosek, and there was a lady from Google there called Emily Schechter. And Emily did this epically, epically good talk about all the research they'd been putting into how people make decisions about trust and safety based on the URL. And she laid it out beautifully, and this is on YouTube, and laid it out to the point where even a room full of InfoSec professionals are looking at these URLs going, I don't know which one's right. I don't know which one's legitimate. Which is the URL for the Google blog? Is it blog.google? Is it google.blog? Is it google.com/blog? No idea. And the point she was trying to make is that it's very, very hard for anyone to make good decisions based on the URL. So that what Chrome wants to do is sort of, what Google wants to do is decide how much of Chrome should show how much URL. And their position is that when you have too much crap in the URL, it actually makes it harder to focus on the important bits. Now, then we get to Android Police, and their headline is, Google resumes its senseless attack on the URL bar, hides full addresses on Chrome 85. And this is a very hand-wavy sort of title here, like senseless attack on the URL bar. Now, so senseless, when Google makes changes to Chrome in a user-facing way, is usually done on the basis of really extensive user acceptance testing. And then someone just jumps up and writes a headline based on their own personal experiences. So I think that this headline is just completely off the mark, and it misses the more holistic picture. And that holistic picture is some people will get some benefit from looking at the URL. Absolutely granted. Now, if the URL is important to you and you're smart enough to actually be able to do something useful with the URL, and frankly, I'm not sure that I am, because a lot of stuff gets hidden away in query strings and that sort of thing, Then you toggle it and you go, oh, I'd actually like to leave that on. Fine, you can do that. For everyone else, it takes away things that they don't actually need. So Google has been heading this way in for quite some time. Obviously, the scheme has been removed for quite some time. So we haven't seen http://, or HTTPS. That's partly becoming useless because so much stuff is secure by default anyway. There's obviously been the removal of the www. Now, is that still gone or is that one of the things that was on the list? Yep, that is still gone. So if I go to my blog, which is not served by default over the naked domain, but is www, just says troyhunt.com. No www. And if the whole path goes, or if I think in Firefox at the moment it still sort of grays out, then fine. And incidentally, before everyone absolutely loses their minds over this, Safari on iOS has done this for ages. All you see is the domain name because it's too small to see the full URL anyway. So I think that the hand wavy is just a little bit crazy on this. Now, I saw Stefan's comment. Yes, people are whining about this. then they're still wrong, mate. Anyway, so there's that. Now, there's another thing this week, which was really interesting. Apple had their WWDC event, and I would normally have watched it by now, but reasons, busy, school holidays, jet skiing. And after they had their event, a heap of people popped up and they said, hey, Troy, is Apple using Pwn passwords? And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what they've done. So they appear to now have a feature built into their iCloud keychain where they can look at passwords that you've used and see if they appear in data breaches anyway. Gee, that's a good idea, isn't it? Someone should do that. Make it free to everyone, regardless of what platform they're on. Anyway, now in answer to the question, I don't know if they're using Pwn passwords. That is the joy of Pwn passwords. They might have taken everything in there, cracked all those SHA-1 hashes and fed those into their database or cracked a bunch of them. I think the most likely answer is Apple has access to the same data that I have access to. We know that many other big tech companies have this, and this is one of the really interesting things about the data breach scene. There's all this data out there, which in many cases, not all, but in many cases, has been illegally obtained because someone's exploited a vulnerability, sucked it out. Bit of grayness as to whether or not you take data from an exposed database with no protection, if it's illegal or not. I've heard people argue it both ways. I'm not a lawyer. Form your own decisions. Point is that companies like Apple have this data. The data that I've got here is the same as what Apple has and the same as what Amazon has and the same as what a whole bunch of other companies who are doing anything similar have. So in terms of Apple doing this, I suspect they're not using Pwn passwords. They've just got access to the same data. How do I feel about it? I'm happy because I think that what they're doing is a good thing. Obviously, because I do it too. The thing is, I don't have any sort of commercial interest to protect in the way that Pwn passwords is built. So I'm very happy that they're doing that because it's going to help stop more people from using terrible passwords. So, look, I will actually watch that WWDC session. I'm curious to see how it works. I have certainly had, let's say I've had many discussions with many other very large tech companies you know of about similar things, just in terms of the mechanics of how these things work. And again, I'm like, yeah, it makes the world a better place. Do it. All right, let me look at the other comments here. Okay, nothing else of substance there. If you have any other comments or questions, drop them in there now because I'm rapidly reaching the end of my list here. Looking at my shopping trolley of the things that I need to try and go and make happen today. So the monitors. Actually, one other thing that a lot of people recommended, which I had sort of had my eye on a little while ago as well, is the Elgato Stream Deck. Now, this is... Elgato make really nice stuff. So they make a bunch of gaming stuff. They make the green screen that I've used here several times before. It just all sort of rolls up and then you just pick it up out of the canister and it's very, very nicely made. The Stream Deck is effectively physical keys that are programmable and they're LCD and you can get them to show things that you want to. And this normal size Stream Deck is 5x3 keys. So you've got 15 keys. And for all intents and purposes, they're macros. So you can press a key and it will either play something or run a program or whatever else it may be. And the fact that it's a physical device that sits there and you're not sort of like Windows key search for something run seems like a pretty good idea. They're pretty cheap too. They're $269 in Australia. So I thought I'd give one of those a run. And I'm not entirely sure all the things I'm going to do with it yet, but it does look like a handy little unit. So hopefully, hopefully by the time I do this next week, I'll have some of that equipment having arrived. Maybe I will have fixed my mic and actually got the shock mount working, but I suspect I'll still be in a bit of a mess whilst I don't have a proper PC. But that'll be sorted. So look, thanks for watching this one. I know I jumped around on a bunch of different things. I do have several blog posts that I really want to try and get out. One in particular that I really want to be able to talk about, which is not very InfoSec or tech related at all. But I'm going to see how I go with that, particularly over the weekend, and see if I can get it out during next week. And that will be a really interesting thing to talk about if I can make that happen. So thank you very much for watching this week, and I'll come back next week. See ya.